I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome everyone to the Unimpressed podcast. Today we have comedian Tom Cotter from America's Got Talent on the show today. So welcome from New York, Tom. How you doing, man?
Welcome back, Cotter. I like it. Very nice. I'm in New York and delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Nice, nice. So are you from New York?
I'm originally from my mother's uterus, but that was in Providence, Rhode Island at the time. So when you want to do comedy and you live in Rhode Island, you either need to go an hour north to Boston or 3 hours south to New York. So I first went to Boston, did 6 years there and then moved to New York. And I've been here ever since.
Okay. Are you, I see that Comedy Cellar. T-shirt. Do you do a lot of shows at the Comedy Cellar?
That is one of the many rooms we have here in New York City, and they're very good to me. They always have been, and I like to think I'm good to them. So, yeah, I love working down there.
Nice. So what is your, how did you get into going to America's Got Talent? I do know the casting agent there, and what has that done for you till today?
The show is a behemoth. It's wonderful. I've been at this for 30 years, so over 30 years. So we all do late night. Everybody's done, Conan or Letterman or Leno. Every comic does those. But if you do those, you get maybe 5 million people seeing you because it's late at night. And half of those people are asleep, just their TV's still on. So the Nielsen ratings are deceptive. When you do America's Got Talent, our worst rating was 13 million, and that was for a rerun. We had 20 million a couple of episodes. It's just a lot of eyeballs. People are not just watching. They're engaged. They're actively engaged in the show. So the show is gigantic, and I got very lucky to get on there, and it was the best thing that's ever happened in my career.
Now, do you think that's the new wave? I mean, we're in comedy, and we manage a couple comedians, and we've built our guys through social. And we had one comedian, we sold out 150 shows in a row. And now, if you look at the comedy industry now, right, compared to say 10, 15 years ago.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Where's the transition? Where's the dilution? What do you see as an upswing with how social is kind of taking that Tonight Show position? So do you think this American Got Talent for, say, a comedian that's out there is the way to go to look at that to help your career? Because I do know a lot of people have been on the Tonight Shows and so forth. And that was supposed to be like the breadwinner, right? When you got a Tonight Show gig, you were off to the races. And now some of these guys do that show and they can't sell tickets.
Yeah.
But the guys who are selling tickets are the guys on social media. What is your take on that?
Yeah, there really has been a seismic shift in the industry. And I was chatting with one of your coworkers this morning, Tyler McKinley, and he put me in onto some of your guys that you handle. And you really are, I have to say, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on with you right now, that is the cutting edge. Where it used to be, to your point, when you used to do Johnny Carson, if he summoned you over to the couch, you were anointed. You made it. The next day, your phone rang off the hook and you were booked for 3 years solid, making ridiculous money. Even if he just waved at you, you still, you know, got a nice bump just being on the show. But there was only one show at that time. Then that got watered down because then you had Conan, you had Letterman, you had Kimmel, you had all these other kind of knockoffs of The Tonight Show. And now, doing things like, for me, it was America's Got Talent. That raised my level. But doing these videos and having a big social media presence is what puts asses in seats, pardon my language. But that's really what does. That sells tickets and that's put. So I just did a show a weekend down at a club called Sandman Comedy Club in Richmond, Virginia. And they were telling me that the people they had on that were social media sensations were the ones who were really selling tickets. And people like myself, we did okay. I mean, we had a nice weekend there. We had good crowds. But the lines out the door are the people from social media that are making, you know, that are sensations and have viral videos and have a million followers. Those are the people that are now putting butts in seats. And it's just amazing to see the transition from, like, guys I looked up to when I started. Some of those guys still have black and white headshots. They don't even have a website. They have zero social media exposure. And they're really, really funny guys, yet they can't get arrested, let alone booked. And then the guys who, there are some people on social media that are that have a great social media presence, but then they show up at the comedy club and they only have 15 minutes worth of stand-up. So that's the downside of that. But definitely what you guys are into now, which is promoting people on social media, that is the new behemoth. That's the new game in town. You're no longer sending a tape. Now you're sending a click or a link. And, it's all about followers.
Well, I think something you said there is a key comment in this scenario, which I've always said talent is talent. It doesn't matter what medium this talent comes from. And I always said that, social media influencer or YouTube star, whatever you want to call it, is a bad word. And I think why people still call these, talents, influencers or social media stars is because the middle part you said where the translation to stage, right? And I think, being able to translate that talent from social to stage is a big deal. And that's where the burn is, because you may run into those guys that have a big following that can't translate to stage. Do you think they can ever start defining that, where talent is talent and we can cut the fat per se, where these guys that can't translate to stage?
I think the market will do that for you. I think, if these guys can't hold their own on stage, then the people won't come back and see them again. But if they can, if they are, and the guys that I saw that Mr. McKinley put me onto this morning all seem to be not just great on social media, but have great stage presence and have, a great act. It reminds me of when I first got into NACA, which is the National Association of Campus Activities. There were guys who, you'd go and do a showcase, and the showcase was only 7 minutes long. And in those 7 minutes, those kids would kill. And then they'd show up at a college and be booked to do an hour. And after 7 minutes, they had nothing left. So it was 45 minutes of agony after their first 15 minutes, where they really had all their best material, their only material. So there are some people on social media, but I think that there's a thinning of the herd. I think those people are being weeded out, and the people who really are talented and have, a great act or a great stage presence, a great show to put on, if they can marry that with a social media exposure, then that's the golden ticket. That's really what takes it. From my experience, watching the guys I'm working with, there are people in my kind of inner circle that are that are just tremendous social media exposure, and then they get on stage and blow the roof off the place. And so that's the golden ticket, I think.
And what is your vein of relatability?
My what?
Your vein of relatability. You know, I always say comedians have a certain relatable story in their act. Is there something that you kind of stay with?
We may have called that a hook back in my day. You know, what's your hook? And I never really had a hook. I have a style. My style of comedy is kind of a rapid fire misdirection comedy that goes all the way back to vaudeville, but it's a style that I kind of honed in Boston and then brought down to New York with me. So it's not just set up punchline, it's set up punchline, tagline, tagline, tagline. And each tagline takes a left turn or is a misdirection. So there's a lot of double entendre and innuendo and puns and stuff like that. It's fun to write, but it can be exhausting after an hour just because it's a lot of material crammed into a short amount of time. So that's my thing. But I know other comics have a great hook. They just have, you know, something that get her done. You know, Larry the Cable Guy has done wonderfully with that over the years. And Jeff Foxworthy, you might be a redneck if. So a lot of guys have those hooks. I never really had one.
And who have you worked with? Who have you worked with in your career?
Worked with on stage.
Yeah. Just who have you worked with, you know, done a show with, or
yeah,
that you looked up to or respected?
I used to open for the Smothers Brothers a lot. Old school people. I like Joan Rivers. I got to work with her on America's Got Talent. A lot of music acts I've opened for, but the guys in my field that I really love, Don Gavin is a guy out of Boston. He's an old school comic, does a lot of ships now, or did until the pandemic. But he's of that vein. He's the misdirection guy. Wendy Liebman is also in that same style of comedy. I like working with my wife, who's also a comic, Carrie Louise. So okay. I have to say that, so I remain married. And yeah, there are a lot of people that I work with that I love.
Well, now how does that work? Two comedians married together. How does that work? Because they're very unique characters, in my experience.
Yeah,
comedians are.
We are an endangered species. There are not many married comedy couples, and people get nostalgic for it. They long for Burns and Allen and Nichols and May and Lucy and Desi, but there just aren't that many of us out there now. So we get called in to do that pretty frequently because people, again, just it harkens back to their youth. So older crowds like to see that more than younger crowds. But younger crowds like to see it too. It's just an interesting dynamic. It's hard for us. We do a comedy team thing, but it's not that easy for us because her style is very different than my style. Again, I'm a rapid fire one liner kind of guy, and she is a storyteller. So to marry those two styles together is a challenge, but we do it and we have a lot of fun doing it. It's great to work with her. You know, it also saves the booker money because it's one hotel room and we're pretty low maintenance.
Well, what is how it when you're not doing comedy in your home, do y'all get up and say, hey, let's work on this bit. Let's do this. What do you do outside of the comedy deal?
Well,
as a couple, just as a normal thing.
Well, we're parents. We have three boys. So that takes up a lot of our free time. Today, case in point, I have stuff going on with my youngest. And my wife is right now, we have a summer house up on Cape Cod, and she's up there for the month of July. I just came home because I had to do something here in the city. So when we're together, we like to, she writes for me, I write for her. If she has something that she comes up with, she thinks would be right for my act, she'll throw it to me and vice versa. So we do that. But we also, she's auditioning for stuff and there's you'd think we work an hour a night that we'd have a ton of free time. We don't. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, the days and it's, when you get busy in this business, the days go by very, very fast. Is what I've learned, if you will.
Tell my dad that, will you? Because he thinks I'm a load. He thinks, oh, you work an hour a night, you're not doing anything. He doesn't know how long it takes to develop an act, how long, you know, you got to travel to get to the gig, and there's all those nightmares involved. But it can be daunting.
So has being married to a comedian and having kids, has that rubbed off on the kids? Do any of the kids want to follow suit?
My oldest has already told us that he will try comedy, but he wants to be an engineer. So he wants to do it as a hobby. He's much more realistic about it. So that's how I started. I said, I will try it as a hobby. I had a day job. Most comics do, because when you're first starting out, you're not getting paid to do comedy. So eventually I was able to retire the day job and continue this for the last three decades. But my son is definitely gung-ho to be an engineer. He will do it as a hobby. The other two haven't committed one way or the other. But frankly, I don't really want them to go into comedy. It's a really tough road to hoe. And, you know, you handle some guys, so you know this. It's not an easy path. It is the road less traveled for a reason. So, you know, there is no 401k. There's no health and dental. I married a comedian, so that's two of us that just went for a year and a half kind of unemployed. We did a lot of Zoom shows, but we were non-essential. That's what everyone told us. My mother-in-law prefers the term useless, but either way, it's hurtful.
How about, what do you think about positivity? Because I had a conversation with one of our guys, and he's always questioning everything. Well, do people want to come see me? Are they going to show up to the show? I'm like, don't, just focus on your talent, right? Let us worry about the numbers and so forth. Where do you think that comes from? That angst? Sometimes there's some insecurity there.
Well, I shouldn't say this, but I really believe comics in general are, we're a unique breed. We're not the most mentally balanced people on the planet. If you look at us, they say that dentists have the highest suicide rate, but I think comics are probably right up there with it. I can't tell you how many comics I know that are in and out of rehab or on their seventh wife or, you know, some kind of nightmare. You can't want the spotlight on you that much and need attention that much and, you know, not have something going on in your head. It's just not normal behavior. But Seinfeld seems to be very balanced. And I'm not in rehab currently, so that's a good thing. I just think comics are unique. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I know that a lot of my comic friends have seen psychiatrists. So I think we're also a little insecure. I remember when I first did comedy, I would get off stage and go into the bathroom and sit in a bathroom stall with the door shut because I wanted to hear what people said about the show when they came into the bathroom. Because guys that come into the bathroom, you know, when they're at the urinal or at the other toilet, will say, oh, that guy sucked, or that guy was great, or, you know, well, that guy was really funny. And that was my own insecurity. I had to hear that feedback from them without them knowing I was listening. And that's not normal behavior. Guys shouldn't go to the bathroom and hide out in a bathroom stall to hear what people think about them. But I think we're all a little insecure. So I try to be positive, to your point. I think I am a pretty positive guy, but there's a lot of negativity in our industry. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's very tough. I mean, comedy, they say comedy is the hardest genre to be successful in entertainment. I mean, that's what I've heard per se, but well, when you think about it, like a Robin Williams or somebody like that, and you're thinking about their mind, if you ever watch his set or, you know, his jokes, he would run two or three jokes parallel, different stories parallel at the same time and make them all funny. Now, you know, if someone is doing that, you know, there's a lot going on up there to be able to pull that off. So, you know, if he did two or three 8 balls of cocaine, you know, he might have a little bit of an excuse there. I don't know. But, you know, outside looking in, I don't think people understand that per se.
Yeah, present company excluded. But I think comics in general are very brilliant people. I think you have to be sharp. You can't be an idiot in our industry. You just can't. So, yeah, I think like Tommy Smothers, for example, of the Smothers Brothers, is the zany guy, you know, and Dickie Smothers is the straight-laced, straight guy, as it were. Well, Tommy is the brilliant, you know, the guy behind everything. He writes all their material. He does all their bookings. He does everything. He's just brilliant, but he comes off his stage on stage as a character, and the character is like a Jerry Lewis, kind of an imbecile, but he certainly isn't. The guy is absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, you know, I think all comics they're not mutually exclusive. You can still have depression and be brilliant. And I think a lot of comics are in that vein. They might be manic depressive or they might be bipolar or whatever. I know a lot of comics that are like that. But there are a lot of comics who are like Ray Romano and Seinfeld and everybody who are just narrow, straight and narrow, just family guys, had their head on straight, seem to be just very successful guys and well-balanced.
I'm going to have a sip of my green tea. It looks like you have Dunkin'.
It was McDonald's. I have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not a health nut.
What do you see in the future for you right now? Coming out of this pandemic, somewhat, we're still getting some pullback. There's some areas that are still on the fence with certain regulations and so forth. Do you have a 6-month plan of coming out of this thing?
Well, you know, it seems to be an uptick. It's kind of weird because now the Delta variant is in there. So people are, you know, they have some trepidation about booking things far out. But we are right now, the calendar is filling up, thank God. And we've really been kind of busy lately. This last 2 weeks for me has been gangbusters. And I'm never going to complain about that. I will never say, oh, my God, I'm too busy, because I just went through a year and a half of twiddling my thumbs with every other comic that I know. So it's great to be back at it. These gigs that I'm taking with a grain of salt. I know they can cancel them again if this Delta variant goes out of control and we have to shut down things again. But I'm happy to have the dates on the calendar, and we'll just keep swinging away and trying to get out there and tell jokes. It's all C's for me. It always has been. It's corporate gigs pay the best. So I do a lot of corporate, colleges, cruise ship casinos, and comedy clubs. And then in the summer, country clubs. So it's those C's. I'm trying to work them all. I know comics who are just kind of one trick ponies. They just work on cruise ships, or they just do the corporate market, or just do colleges. I like to be well-rounded. I've been doing this a long time, so I have those relationships. And we're just going to go back, put our nose to the grindstone and do it. And my wife the same.
Now, is there any part of the country that people can look for you that you frequent?
Yeah, Florida, even during the pandemic, because they were in a little bit of denial that we were in a pandemic. So thank God they were, because I had live shows down there during the pandemic. I do a lot in Florida. I do what they call the condo circuit in our language. There's these gated communities. The ones I do are primarily Jewish. I'm the token Gentile that gets to go and work these places. They're usually Jewish comics that work for them. But I got into the Friars Club a long time ago, 20 years ago, and I established those relationships. And so I did the Catskills, which is also a very Jewish-centric comedy world. And now they've all moved down to Florida, and I do those condos. Not just specifically the Jewish ones, but those seem to be the predominant ones. So I'm down there a lot doing those. They all have theaters. And they're great gigs. And then the clubs down there also are very good to me and always have been. And so, yeah, that region, for whatever reason, is very good to me. But I'm also in the Midwest, and I get out west on occasion as well.
So what's going on in New York right now? How's government? What's going on? Everything good? I mean, it's a little intense when I was up there. I don't do politics. So I don't pick a side. I just try to talk about what's going on in people's lives. And when we were up there, it was a little intense. And I just wonder if that's calmed down any, or is it still a little intense up there with everything that's going on?
You're smart not to wade into the politics, especially up here. It's a dumpster fire. It really is. Our governor is Cuomo. You know all his issues right now. And our mayor is de Blasio, and they're both Democrats, but they hate each other. And so they're taking every opportunity they can to snipe at each other. Meanwhile, you know, the whole defund the police thing has caused our violent crime is through the roof right now. People are fleeing New York like rats off a burning ship. And so real estate is down because all these places are becoming empty, and all the burbs around New York, you can't touch property around there for less than, you know, $500,000 over ask is what they're getting in Greenwich, Connecticut. So people are fleeing the city. It's unfortunate. I hope it can rebound. It always has. So I'm confident it will. But man, this was a tough one. This was a body blow because they had to empty all the homeless shelters because they were super spreaders. And all those homeless people came out onto the streets, and you know, the rich people on the Upper West Side did not want to step over needles and human beings on their way to their Wall Street jobs. So they all said, screw this, I'm not paying these taxes and living like this. So they all left.
Yeah.
And so it is kind of a nightmare. But the comedy scene seems to be coming back. So selfishly, I'm happy. The Cellar is working a lot. I was just at the comic strip. Last night I was at Gotham Comedy Club. So they're all that, you know, there are people coming out to see shows, thank God. And we hope that that continues.
Now, did Caroline's open back up?
I don't know. And, you know, that was the one, John, I was worried the most about them, because they, for a year and a half, they had zero income, yet they're paying Times Square rent, which had to be exorbitant. I don't know what she pays, Caroline Hirsch, but I also know she's very wealthy. And if someone can survive a year and a half of laying fallow, it would be her. But man, that was tough. We lost Dangerfields. Dangerfields, the oldest club in the city, is now gone. And the comic strip is, battling to stay. They have unfortunately, one of their owners passed away during COVID. So there's a squabble over ownership of that. We hope that can survive. That's a great club, one of my favorites. So, yeah, we're trying to see where all the dust settles after a year and a half of no work.
So New York is still, the city is still having people get out of there till this day.
The residents, yeah, and tourism is slowly trying to come back. But then, you know, these people read the headlines, and the headlines are that violent crime is up. You've seen the video clips of there are shootings in Times Square in broad daylight that never happened, you know, 10 years ago. So since the time of Mayor Dinkins, when I used to date a girl in New York at the time when Dinkins was mayor, and I would come down to visit her, and I'd come above ground from the subway, and there were homeless people everywhere. And God bless him, he tried, but it was just a tough thing. And then Giuliani came in, cleaned everything up. And then we've had some decent mayors since then that have kept the city kind of on a good path. But right now it's, and I don't blame de Blasio. I just know it's kind of, you know, he was dealt a horrible hand with COVID and with the defund the police thing and all these things. So crime is really an issue. And de Blasio, I don't know why New York is shocked that de Blasio is a Boston Red Sox fan. How do you elect a Red Sox fan as the mayor of New York and not think that it's going to go poorly? But
I know, right?
And that's the way it is.
Well, I will say this. Bloomberg, I think, did a hell of a job, because when you're in the city, when Bloomberg was mayor, is like you're walking on a movie set.
Yeah.
I mean, it was clean. It was big. I mean, even though it was Big Brother and it had 25,000 cops, it was nice to be in the city and you didn't have to worry about much. But it seems like that has gone away, I guess.
It has. And again, they really were dealt a bad hand, but de Blasio was okay at first, I guess. I wasn't, you know, he's not my cup of tea, but he tried, at least. I'm trying to be fair here. But Giuliani came in and literally bulldozed down crack houses and, you know, did a lot to put a lot more cops on the street. And that was good. And then Bloomberg picked up the ball and ran with it from Giuliani and did arguably a better job. I think a better job. But then, we're in our current state right now. And hopefully we can emerge like the phoenix from the ashes when this is all done and be good. New York always comes back. It's always resilient. But these people all fled to the rich people all went to their houses in the Hamptons, or they went to their, you know, houses on Nantucket because they just wanted the heck out of New York. And they're the tax base. So when they're leaving, that's trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there has been somewhat of a paradigm shift, I think. And I guess we'll see, like you said, see what happens when the dust settles. I mean, I love New York and I love the energy, and hopefully it'll get back to what it was, you know. And we may eventually get an apartment there if we can find one cheap.
You can right now. Now's the time. Strike while the iron's hot. Get a presence in New York. New York it's always been the comedy mecca. I always tell people L.A. is great if you want to be an actor, but unless they roll out the red carpet for you and you have, you know, a great manager, a great agent, you're going to get lost in L.A. But in New York, there's 18 comedy clubs, I believe it is now, just in Manhattan. So there's tons of stage time. And if you're willing to put in the work and get the stage time, you're going to be fine here, and it's going to be a great, you know, path for you to become the success that you want to be.
And how about the Stand? Is it moving?
Yeah, well, it did move once, and I don't know since the pandemic. I haven't been there since I don't know if they've opened up again. I don't even know if they, when I go downtown, I usually work at the Cellar. The Cellar has four rooms. So you go down there, you do the Underground, the Fat Black Pussycat, the original Comedy Cellar, and the Cafe Wa is right there. And those are all owned by the same people. And so when you call Esty, who books it, who's a doll, she'll fill up your weekend completely and you won't have to drive anywhere. You just walk from one room to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And she also pays pretty well. So it's, when I go downtown, those are the ones I work just because I'm lazy and I don't want to have to get in a cab or an Uber. It's just easy.
Yeah. Well, is there anything we want to hit on? Anything you want to put out there to the world to market, promote, as we get down to closing this thing out?
Sure. First of all, honored to be on with you. I'm really impressed with Bang. I looked up some of your stuff afterwards after I had chatted with Mr. McKinley and impressive. And you guys really are kind of the wave of the future and you're seeing it happen. As I just said, I was at that club in Richmond, the Sandman Comedy Club, and they're telling me, as other clubs have, that people with a strong social media presence are really filling the rooms. And that's what the club owners want, because you sell more booze, you sell more food and the admission ticket, and that's the way to go. So that's all been good for me personally. I have a book out. It's called Bad Dad. It's on Amazon. If you're a devout Muslim or a born again Christian, that is not the book for you. It's a little edgy. So I was on Huckabee. I don't know if you know the show Huckabee. I did a set on his show. Yeah. And he's great. I love the guy. And at the end of my performance in the interview, he held up my book unbeknownst to me and told his viewers to buy the book for Father's Day. And people bought the book, and these are very religious, devoutly religious people. And they were offended. And I felt horrible about that, because I say right inside the cover of the book, you know, this is an edgy book. Please don't, if you're very sensitive. Well,
give me a little scenario of a bad dad. What's a Tom Cotter bad dad? What is that? Give me a scenario.
It's just a bunch of interstitials. It's a little kind of one-liners about being a parent. It's, my dad used to come home drunk and put me up on his shoulders, and then he would jump up and down underneath the ceiling fan. It's that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's stupid stuff like that.
How did that feel? I mean, are you okay from that?
I got a haircut. Yeah. stupid things about being a parent. You know, teach your kids that words can hurt by throwing a dictionary at them, stuff like that. So it's a bunch of those little one-liners. And it's, I think it's funny, and I hope people will think it's funny. But if you're, again, very religious, that is not the reading material that you should seek out.
Cool. Well, Tom, am I saying your last name right? Cotter?
Cotter, yeah. It's like Welcome Back, Cotter.
Welcome Back, Carter.
Okay. Yeah, C-O-T-T-E-R. Remember that show?
Yep, I do remember that show.
Yeah,
that was, I was a little younger, but yeah, that's Welcome Back, Carter. It was a good show.
It was great. An African-American kid, an Italian kid, a Jewish kid, and a Hispanic kid living in Brooklyn, and they were all best friends, which I Dream of Jeannie was more believable than that show. But anyway, it was fun to watch, and...
That's what we need to get back to. We need to get back to simplicity.
I agree.
You know, I think if we can make things simple, you know, people might start being humans again. You know,
wouldn't that be a joy? Your lips to God's ears. I would love that.
Well, if anybody's out there and see the name Tom Cotter, very, very funny guy, check out his book, Bad Dad. And yeah, it was enjoying to talk to you. Give me a little bit of the information about New York, saying I haven't missed much since I've been gone. And
no, but you should come back. Everyone should come back. We'd love to have you. We're open for business.
Absolutely. I will be back. And like I said, we may get an apartment back up there, and we'll see what happens in the next couple months. But yes, Tom, appreciate you coming on the show. And this has been your Unimpressed this has been your Unimpressed podcast. And I'm John Edmonds Cosmo, the CEO of Bang Productions.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.